Let's get to Ana Lilia Mejia, the Bernie-crat that won the New Jersey 11 special election that took place because Mickey Schirrill went for the governor's race and occupied the seat vacated the seat. Sorry. And there are some interesting elements of this electoral victory. It was a blowout victory. It's plus 23. It was obviously it was certainly better than Kamala Harris's margin of victory. However, what's interesting about it is there were some losses, some marginal losses in certain districts, okay, in certain townships. And centrist Twitter and election trackers have been losing their dang minds over it.
Jersey, that special election for a House seat ending with far-left progressive Ana Lilia Mejia handily defeating the Republican Joe Hathaway. Here's what she said last night in her victory speech in Montclair, New Jersey.
We stand up. We resist. We will not allow it to continue. This system is broken, but guess what? We are the glue.
So she's looking for the attention, and she's got it now. Brian Yenis has the fallout today.
I don't know why we're doing the Fox News coverage. Let's look at Harry Emden for a second.
Holy Toledo.
Harry Emden breaks down the Ana Lilia Mejia win in a special election in New Jersey's 11th district, allowing Democrats to further narrow Republicans' razor-thin majority in the U.S. House. Let's take a look.
You know, but bottom line is this. Kamala Harris won that district by 9 points, but right now we obviously see that Mejia is way out ahead. But that is not surprising me because it's part of a larger picture. Look, we are now talking about seven special elections. And in every single one of them that we've had during the second Trump era, the Democratic candidates for the House have outrun the Kamala Harris baseline. You know, Florida won last year. I remember you and I were together. 23 points, 16 points in Florida, 6. Virginia, 11, 17 points. Arizona, 7, 17 points. Tennessee, 7, 13 points. Georgia, 14, 25 points. And while there are still votes to be counted here in New Jersey's 11th district, I will say at this point, we're probably looking at an overperformance of at least 10 points when all the votes are said and done. So seven special elections, and in every single one of them, the Democratic district for the House of Representatives has outperformed Kamala Harris's baseline by at least 10 points.
Holy Toledo. Holy Toledo. Ladies and gentlemen, it was a blowout, as expected. Now, although it was a blowout as expected, there were still some centrists on election Twitter that were frustrated for some weird reason. Election watchers on the centrist side, on the centrist side of election watcher Twitter, were unbearable because, you know, it's not enough that Ana Lilia Mejia actually won and won big. She could have won even harder if she was a centrist, if she could have won even harder if she wasn't anti-genocide. That's what election Twitter was focusing on, very aggressively, mind you. And of course, Steve Kornacki had some analysis on this as well. In New Jersey 11, Mejia won. Yeah, she didn't win the right way. Mejia won with what has been the customary Dem recipe during Trump's second term, a massively motivated base in the college plus burbs and giant gains in Hispanic areas where Trump had done unusually well for a Republican. What was different, however, she lost substantial ground in two large traditionally Dem municipalities with substantial Jewish populations. This is true, Livingston being one of them. And she did. She actually underperformed Kamala Harris in these two substantially large Jewish populations, but she won big regardless, right? Which was the argument that I had presented over and over again. There are far more people who actually care about taking a strong anti-genocide position than there are those who will claim that they won't vote for you or even vote for the Republican if you are pro-genocide. Now, here's the thing. This turned out to be the truth. This turned out, we don't even need to speculate on this any further. This is quite literally the reality, observable reality. But that didn't stop you, Mitch Voter, from posting the, you know, the Milburn and Livingston underperformance versus the electorate perspective here. Claire, this struck a nerve. Going to repost this chart from yesterday since the online left can't stop being miserable. Would love to hear what part of the sentence folks disagree with. The reason why people are dunking on you, Mitch Voter, is because she won. She overperformed Kamala Harris. It doesn't matter that she underperformed in Livingston and underperformed in Milburn? What the fuck are we talking about? And I jokingly said, for every pro-Israel, pro-ICE voter we lose in Livingston, we pick up two wokes in the other suburbs, which is true, which is literally what happened, right? And that was actually what I was trying to explain to people. Anna Lilia outperformed the centrist Dems' best ever result by 5% during the 2018 blue wave. If that's what standing up to Israel's genocide does for you, that's a massive landslide nationwide. Ironically enough, I think Anna Lilia Mejia did some things that she didn't even need to do. And she still lost that vote. The important lesson here is you don't even need the J Street endorsement, in my opinion. You can just stand loudly and proudly and be anti-Zionist, be anti-genocide, and it's totally fine. Because Anna Lilia Mejia was the only candidate that was anti-genocide, right? Malinowski wasn't. But Malinowski had, at some point, if we're looking back in the primaries real quick to remind people, Tom Malinowski is a regular lib with a lot of established relationships. And not only that, but also a longer track record than Anna Lilia in Congress. And yet AIPAC ran ads against Malinowski, showing that Malinowski, and on those ads, they said Malinowski was pro-ICE. That's also important. They obviously didn't talk about Israel. But the reason why AIPAC ran those ads was because Malinowski was slated to win this race. And AIPAC had their own candidate, and Malinowski was attacked as being not sufficiently anti-ICE at a time when this was fairly consequential in the eyes of many liberal voters in the region. But the reason why AIPAC did this was because Malinowski had made the mistake, I guess, according to AIPAC's estimations, of saying he could look at conditioning aid to the state of Israel. That is all it took for AIPAC to launch the money cannon against Malinowski. That's all this was, by the way. AIPAC is such an insane institution that even someone who has always been pro-Israel that said at one point that they could potentially condition aid to Israel, at some point, that's all it took. So they landed a bunch of attack ads on Malinowski saying, never really talking about his perspective on Israel, mind you, but just simply saying Malinowski had been pro-ICE in the past. And of course, people then looked to the anti-ICE candidate, which happened to be the anti-genocide candidate. That was Anna Lilia Mejia. This was seen as a spectacular failure. AIPAC went back to the drawing board and switched tactics very quickly in the Illinois races. And we saw that. You know, they still lost. Daniel Biss won, obviously, and he's now, weirdly enough, one of the most anti-AIPAC guys out there. Daniel Biss has been running around talking about how AIPAC can eat dicks forever. He's become the loudest voice against AIPAC, even though, I mean, he's the J Street candidate, right? He's like still pro-Israel. He's just not a AIPAC candidate. But basically, there's a couple things to learn from this, as I keep repeating over and over again. One, you absolutely can be anti-Israel, and that the electorate cannot punish you for being anti-Israel. This hasn't stopped people from chirping about Anna Lilia's performance in an effort to make it seem like Israel first voters in the Democratic Party that make up 10%, not even 10% in most base, places, but 10% nationally. Those people are not significant enough to make or break elections, but that hasn't stopped people from complaining about it. Michael A. Cohen, not Trump's lawyer, loves to yell about me. Quote retweets this guy, E. Caliber 7, while Mejia outran Kamala big time across most of New Jersey 11, she faced gargantuan, at least R plus 30% defections among Jewish Dems due to her rhetoric on Israel. This was especially prominent in Western Essex towns. This is what'll happen in Michigan if Dems nominate El Sayed, which could be enough to cost Democrats the Senate seat. Now, where have I heard that before? Michael A. Cohen saying he's uncommitted. What if uncommitted, but about doing more genocide and also very bad at math or surveying public opinion? Michael A. Cohen is now claiming that Jewish Michiganders are going to be a significant enough mover and shaker in the state of Michigan, which has the highest density of Arabs in the country, by the way. It's like by totality, I believe it's like the sixth largest. But by per capita numbers, Michigan has the highest per capita population of Muslims. So it's really funny that he's trying to say, oh, we're going to do uncommitted in Michigan for the Jewish Michiganders with, by the way, no guarantee that Jewish Michiganders are going to do this anyway. I don't know what the exact percentages of Jewish Michiganders is, or rather what percentage of them actually are Israel first, because there's also obviously no guarantee. And even if someone is who is Jewish in the state of Michigan cares deeply about the state of Israel, there's also still no guarantee that they will withhold their vote. Jews across the board in the country are, you know, around 75% in favor of the Democratic Party. And the 25% oftentimes are very conservative. Now, that might shift a little bit now that the Democratic Party is, like, whether they want to admit it or not, whether they like it or not, are turning into the anti-Israel party. Those percentages might change a little bit, you know, but it's not a significant percentage of the population. I'm not even saying we should just, you know, cast aside those votes. I'm not saying we should take those votes for granted. But what I'm simply saying is the notion that American Jews living in Michigan are going to be Israel first to such a degree that they won't even fucking vote for someone who's an anti-Israel candidate, like the argument that they presented in New York, which is significantly larger in terms of its per capita Jewish population and also its total Jewish population. When this argument didn't work on Zohran Kwame Mamdani in New York City, what makes you think it's going to work Michigan statewide? New York City is one of the largest, if not the largest, Jewish city on the planet. Jews make up 20% of the New York population. New York has an anti-Zionist, socialist, brown Muslim mayor who is fucking beloved. We have to stop with this bullshit. We have to stop with this nonsense. Let me reemphasize that, says Marshall Steinbaum. My father told me that Meir's victory wasn't assured because the wealthy Jews would vote against her. But it turns out that if you lose them, you pick up a far larger coalition. And that is what the party establishment fears, not losing. But remember, one of the things that I wanted you to understand here was Democrats wanted to win with their own metrics of success in 2024, and they lost. They didn't want to win unconditionally. They wanted to win without foregoing support for Israel, and they lost because of that. Well, here it is. Democrats, by force and by a stroke of luck, let's be real, shouts out to AIPAC for that one. Here are Democrats winning and winning big without the tiny marginal percentage of voters that are Israel first. So I say you can replicate this victory condition across the board, all around the country. And not only that, but you can also have the same victory condition even without having to, like, lean into J Street. Anna Lilia didn't want to do that. She was worried about the same things that we're talking about here. She was worried about the Jewish vote. Turns out there were a lot of people that had previously voted for the Democrats that are Jewish that chose not to vote for Anna Lilia even after she made those concessions. So who gives a shit? Take the moral stance, number one, and stand on your principles, number two, and be loud and proud with your anti-genocide statements. Everyone's focused on the ground. Maybe a loss with Jewish voters, but I think the fact that a candidate who defines Gaza as a genocide still won one of the most Jewish districts in America does a lot to deconstruct the idea that Jewish voters are a monolith against criticisms of Israel. Yep. I mean, they're not a monolith at all, but the story here is that pushing too hard really did cause unthinkable double-digit swings, even in ancestral Dem counties. It's just offset elsewhere by other voters. I mean, it definitely did cost her with Jewish voters, no argument, but I've seen a lot of the more insidious factions on both sides try to enforce the Jewish voters are loyal to Israel narrative on here, and I think it's important to point out when that's exposed as false. Yes. The reason why people are talking about the Jewish vote here is specifically to try to warn the Democrats not to take strong stances against Israel. It doesn't fit. What it does demonstrate is the absolutely massive right-wing swing of American Jews as a voting block, as much as they're a unified voting block, as you've said. They're going full MAGA. No, they're not going full MAGA, but some Jews are. It's true. And pussy too. Jewish areas in New Jersey 11 showing a similar persuasion-induced swing to Republicans that the down-ballot citywide candidates in New York City saw in the wealthy Jewish areas in Manhattan. Yeah, that's what happened. There are some wealthy Jewish voters who care about Israel quite a bit. that swung in the direction of Cuomo as well. It's just they're not as significant. They're not as significant. They're not large enough in numbers. And also, you have to pair that up with their ridiculous demand. The ridiculous demand is what? Don't say the truth about Israel? Get the fuck out of here. It's a 90-10 issue, guys. It's unbelievable to be like, oh, well, what will, you know, some of our wealthy Jewish voters that have reliably voted for the Democratic Party, what will they think? That's ridiculous. Like I've said already, if someone is going to refuse to vote for a Democrat after reliably being a voter for the Democratic Party, because that Democrat is saying the truth about Israel's genocide, which is not only the truth, but it's also the morally correct position. And on top of that, it is the overwhelmingly popular position that channels the desires of the overwhelming majority of the base within the Democratic Party. Then who gives a who gives a fuck? You can say good riddance to some people. You can say that. You're not saying good riddance to all Jewish Democratic Party voters. As a matter of fact, that's not the case at all. It's just funny because this is unironically the argument that I presented to not only the Pod Johns before the election, but this was an argument that I kept repeatedly saying over and over again. There's no guarantee that like Jews overwhelmingly only care about Israel. Two, even if Jews do care about Israel more than like the average person does, let's say, let's lean into that hypothetical, okay? There's no guarantee that they're going to vote for the Republican Party because it's not going to be the number one thing they care about. And, you know, last but not least, even if all Jews almost universally cared about Israel and were making voting decisions based off of that, they're still not large enough in most districts as far as on a per capita basis, with the exception of certain districts, they're not a large enough political force to make or break elections. This was the argument that I presented in 2024. There's a level of contempt here for American democracy. Oh, yeah. She means lose this Senate seat for Israel. That's the country she's talking about. Yeah. Hey, Chuck Schumer, it's your time to shine, says Shannon Watts. Sort this race out. The party and country can't afford to lose the Senate seat. Yeah. The country that she's talking about is not the United States of America. It's talking about the state of Israel, for the record. There's a level of contempt here for American democracy, for Democratic primary voters that's off the charts. They're begging Senate Dem leadership and pro-Israel donors to induce Stevens out of the race so they can consolidate their firepower to block El-Sayed behind Mick Morrow. They're not afraid that he can't win the general. They're afraid that he will and won't keep rubber stamping weapons of unconditional military aid to their special little project. Moreover, they're petrified of a party that isn't beholden to billionaires obsessed with that end. Anyway, the deadline to get off the ballot is next week, 4/24. We'll see if they can engineer what they're nervously begging for. They're trying to get Haley Stevens out of the race so they can lean all of their support into McMorrow, who will be pro-Israel, but is capable of lying and has established at least some level of like proximity or some level of distance to Israel and Israel-aligned groups. That's what it is. It is so fucked up. They're trying to Biden rat this race too against Abdullah Syed like they did in 2020 with Joe Biden. Anyway, she did give a secret policy paper to AIPAC, and I really want to see that. I guess we'll never know what the policy paper looks like though, because the reality is if Stevens was close enough, AIPAC would have leaked it. If Stevens and McMorrow actually were head to head, AIPAC would have leaked it, knowing full well that that would show that like McMorrow is disingenuous. I don't know, someone might leak it anyway. No. No,